Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra. Relegation. Four teams into two places equals 90 minutes of drama. We preview the final day as Newcastle and co. battle the most economically costly drop since Alid Jones's Bulls. Elsewhere, there's all the news from the continent. Spain, Italy, Paolo Maldini's final game. Again, there's a nod to the Football League playoffs. Your post and Wednesday's big match in Istanbul. Shakhtar in the biggest UEFA Cup celebration since my last communion. All that and much, much more in Football Weekly Extra. All systems go then with the pod. It's a tough crowd today, I have to say, listeners. A tough crowd, but in pod terms, a thraking good lineup because returning to the controls is Captain Sean Ingle. Captain.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. Barry Glendinning is also with us here in Near Earth Orbit. Hello, Barry.
Hello, James.
Hello. And Amy Lawrence.
Hello, James.
Oh, the sweet and sultry tones of Amy Lawrence talking about, well, it doesn't really matter, does it, really? Just say something, Amy, go on.
Oh, no. I couldn't possibly.
Ah, dearie me. Now, what we've got to talk about today is the relegation battle. It's a big one this weekend. Of course, on Monday, Portsmouth beat Sunderland 3-1. Very exciting game. And it's left the situation thusly. The team's still at risk. Sunderland on 36 points. Hull City a point beneath them. And then the two who are currently in the bottom three alongside West Brom, Newcastle on 34 and Middlesbrough 2 points further back on 32. This weekend, Sunderland, who are 2 points clear of the drop, host Chelsea. Hull, 1 point clear of the drop, host Man United. Newcastle, in the drop zone at Aston Villa and Middlesbrough at West Ham. Crikey, Sean, where do you want to start?
Well, all three. It's worth, I think, saying that all
Who do you want to go down?
I don't care, really.
No, you bet you do. There's somebody you would like to go down.
It'd be quite funny to see Newcastle go down, let's be honest, wouldn't it?
Says Sean Ingle, laughing at despair of North East fans. Barry, who would you like to go down?
Newcastle.
Amy, who would you like to go down?
Phil Brown.
Really? And why is that?
Because I don't really like him very much.
Right, okay. Is there any particular reason for that?
I think that he's conducted himself in a way unbefitting a Premier League manager at stages of this season.
And is it that earpiece?
Well, it's not good.
Yeah, perhaps with you on that. Well, at the moment, as I say, Newcastle and Middlesbrough are the teams.
And I must say, I have nothing against Hull, and I like the city of Hull,
right,
and its people and its players. It's just Phil Brown, particularly individually, that I...
Right, well, he's from Sunderland, of course, so... Yeah, sorry...
No, I was just going to say, I think it's worth pointing out that all three teams have been so, so poor. I mean, this season, the second half of the season, Newcastle have, I think I'm right in saying it's 8 points from 19 matches, 12 points from 19 matches. At Hull, 8 points from 20 matches. Sunderland, 5 points from 11 matches. I mean, no one wants to get out of it. I mean, I'm sure there were medieval eunuchs with more spunk than these three teams. It's been absolutely pathetic. And
right,
that's why I don't really care who goes down. I mean, indeed, I'd like to have all three down and let's get a few more championship teams up.
Right.
I don't think any of them will be missed particularly, and those who do escape the drop this season probably will go down next season instead.
I think Newcastle will be missed. I mean, I'm sure there's people can come up with reasons for missing all of the potential relegees, but I think certainly the absence of away fixtures in St James's Park would be a blow, I think, to the Premier League. I also am quite in love with the notion of Newcastle having such a spectacularly comic season and still somehow walking away from it all. A bit like those drunks who crash their car and then happily walk out because they were asleep at the wheel at the time, so their body just bounced inside. You've heard the stories, I'm sure.
Yeah, the thing is, I was at Newcastle last
right
weekend, and there was something about the atmosphere around the place that I think people acknowledge they feel quite doomed. I think there was a bit of a problem that they maybe thought they'd done it by beating Middlesbrough in quite euphoric fashion earlier on that week. And there was quite a lot of complacency. And then the sort of slow dawning horror of the fact that they weren't actually very good when they started playing against Fulham seeped into the ground. And rather than there sort of being a very defiant, raucous atmosphere to will the team to get probably the result that would have seen them through, I think if they'd have won last weekend against Fulham, there was such an intense feeling of pressure.
Well, when Newcastle played Fulham, Fulham's centre-halves were Aaron Hughes, who was a very good Newcastle player who was sold to Fulham for £1 million, even though he didn't particularly want to leave. I think Graeme Souness sold him. And Breda Hageland, who was on trial at Newcastle and considered not good enough to be signed, and he's been one of the players of the season in the Premier League.
That's ironic. So
it is very ironic, unless you're Alanis Morissette.
In which case.
It wouldn't be.
Right.
But that kind of tells you all you need to know about Newcastle. Are we all agreed that Middlesbrough are pretty doomed?
Well, Middlesbrough do look doomed. So you've got Sunderland, Hull and then Newcastle fighting over the one remaining spot. And, of course, the big thing that's occupying all the front pages, no, sorry, back pages at the moment, is Hull and their clash with Manchester United. They may not even need a point from that game, Hull, if Newcastle fail to win at Aston Villa or fail to get a point. Because if Newcastle draw at Aston Villa, then Hull will need a point from their clash with Manchester United. Sean?
Well, there's lots of talk about what sort of side United will put out. And,
does
you know,
it matter?
Well, possibly. I mean, they might rail west all 18 players that are going to play in the Champions League next Wednesday. But you know, you look at their squad, they can still play Kushak, Nani, Fletcher, Gary Neville, one of the Silvers, Welbeck, Macheda. That's not a bad side.
Mm.
There's been a few people talking about...
Did you say Park Ji-sung in there or not?
No, I'm sure Park won't play on...
Really? Okay.
I'm sure, because he's got a fair chance of... If he doesn't play on Wednesday night, he'll certainly be in the subs bench. Now, there's a lot about the Premier League Rule E20, which sort of talks about, you know, each participating club should field a full-strength team.
Right.
But no one has ever been punished for breaching that, and I'm sure United can play whatever squad they want on.
Right, it's another of those E numbers that involves an artificial stimulus.
I'm sure. Yeah. How do you define full strength team? You know, it is probably Man United's full strength team under the circumstances. You've got to put it into context, and I think all this stuff about people suing is the biggest load of guff I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, indeed, so
nobody's particularly complained that, you know, Newcastle, Middlesbrough, and Hull haven't been fielding full strength teams or anything that look like full strength teams. Sunderland certainly haven't.
Here's a stat for you. Manchester United have played the fewest long balls this season. Hull have played the most. There you go. What else is happening? Well, as we mentioned, Middlesbrough, West Ham.
How do you define a long ball?
I don't know. It came from Opta. You'd have to ask them. I don't get involved in this kind of thing. I don't get my hands dirty with that kind of...
Producer Pete could put anything on that.
This is not Producer Pete's word. This is me. This is me. And I... I had to do it twice because the computer broke.
Played the balls long. How is that pertinent to the team Manchester United are going to put out on Sunday against Hull?
Well, it's not pertinent to that, but it does... I'm a fan of symmetry in sport.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and that's certainly symmetrical. One had to face them. Good. Listen, one other thing. Just we mentioned briefly Manchester United before we closed down on part one, and that's Prawns, who has taken to the air and flown a big loop-the-loop in the face of conventional wisdom. Because we were talking last week about the fact that Liverpool's squad wasn't deep enough and they were too reliant on players, and Raphael Honigstein said, oh, you know, it's all about the fact that Torres and Gerrard have been injured, and that's what's hindered them. And you'd never hear Manchester United saying, oh, well, we're reliant on, you know, if those players have been injured, you know, they just have a big enough squad to cope. He says, no, that's not true at all. If Rooney and Ronaldo had missed as many games as Torres and Gerrard this season, Man United would have not won the league. They probably wouldn't even come a close second. His stat to back this up is the fact that Ron missed three league games at the start of the season, just three. In those three league games, Man United was simply terrible, struggling to get a draw at home to the worst Newcastle team in a generation. He points out, additionally, that Liverpool have three players in the top 10 goalscorers, whereas Man United only have Ronaldo and Rooney, and therefore he posits that if those two had been absent for a large part of the season, as Torres and Gerrard were, that Man United wouldn't have been able to cope with it all. So it's an interesting point, that one.
It's all speculation.
It is all speculation, but, you know, puts things, perhaps, our evaluation of managerial successes, etc., in perspective. Guardian.co.uk/football is the place to keep up to date with all the latest news, views and comment on the world of quite literally football. Amy, you've been off a-trivelling and a-travelling, have you not? Did you not go off and meet Paolo Maldini? You're about
I
to go meet.
I have done, but in the past. I didn't go very recently. But
you just cut and pasted from an old interview, did you?
Something like that.
Because you're preparing a tribute to the great... Probably one of the greatest left backs
ever seen.
The
incomparable Paolo Maldini.
Incomparable, yes. Yeah. Paolo Maldini. And why? Why this weekend,
why?
Amy? Why?
This weekend, because this weekend he's going to bid arrivederci to the San Siro.
Adios. Well, adio, rather. Yeah.
After 25 years. If you think about actually 25 years at the top of his game, it's extraordinary. And Ryan Giggs, just to get it in a bit of perspective, needs to carry on for another 7 years to play as long as that. Raul needs to play for another decade. If you're talking about these one club figures, these iconic players. And he is pretty much the only footballer that I've gone to interview in the past and have completely lost the capacity to speak, which is a bit embarrassing when you're supposed to be asking questions. But yeah, I unashamedly admit that he is my football crush.
Well, what happened when you were stuttering and
stuttering? Blushing. He was all very very uncool, I have to admit. Yes,
right.
I mean,
he's
probably
used
to it. Having said that, no, his wife wasn't there. It was official AC Milan duty,
right.
So he wasn't en famille.
Right. Okay. A lovely chap.
If you think about Italian football being defensively anyway known for being a bit sly and nasty, and the reputation of Italian defenders for a niggle and a pinch and so on, I don't think Maldini has probably ever done that
years
in his career.
That thing of never picking up a book.
He's incredibly charming, wonderful superhero guy. What more can I say?
Yeah.
James, can I ask you,
yeah.
I think we all agree that for a period of time, probably throughout the 90s, he was a great player. But don't you think he's been perhaps on the slide for 6, 7, 8 years and maybe could have... You know, we all want sort of, you know, the show to go on for as long as possible,
yeah.
But perhaps he's...
Well, he himself has felt for certainly 5 years that he is not the player that he was. And that's why he's been positing retirement for certainly 3 or 4 years now, I think, because he felt that his knees, although he enjoyed playing, his knees just weren't putting him in a position where he could do what he used to do. And I think certainly the number of times that he's been at the heart of goals given away by Milan of late has made it imperative, I think, that to preserve his legendary status, he does finally bring down the curtain. He is 40 after all. What's he going to do now?
I think there's quite a lot of debate. He said he's going to have a break. And I'm sure that Milan will find any kind of job for him that he might want. I mean, I'm not suggesting that he would take over from Ancelotti if the managerial post suddenly becomes vacant. But I think certainly some sort of role, ambassadorial or coaching, if he wants it, would be available. And I think the Italian Football Federation would probably do something likewise also.
Mm. His dad, of course, is still Cesare Maldini, who had such success with the Italian national team, is back as I think, head of their scouts.
And his son must be near making his debut, is he?
Was that famous YouTube clip? Yeah.
His oldest boy is 13.
Oh, I thought he was older.
In the Milan youth system.
Well, that's only 3 years away from the age that Paolo debuted in the Milan.
No, I thought he was 15 or 16.
Oh.
So I was expecting to see him sometime in the next season or two. No pressure, obviously.
13, about 20 years away from a first-team debut at Milan, of course, in the old joke. But no, and there's that fabulous... Is it Christian, the clip of him from a couple of years ago executing a slide tackle on Clarence Seedorf? It's just... unbelievable. It's pure Maldini, and this little kid, I mean, Clarence Seedorf's going along dribbly, and this little kid comes out and just comfortably slides the leg in and de-balls him, as I believe.
Not only does he de-ball him, he does that thing which sounds really painful, but he also rises to his feet in the one movement and comes out of the tackle ready to pass. And as a great left back myself, that's not as easy as it looks.
It isn't, is it?
No.
Okay. You mentioned the managerial post suddenly coming available at Milan. Of course, Carlo Ancelotti, the Italian press, insists there's already signed up for Chelsea, and there's all sorts of talk about who's going in there. Berlusconi's been dropping hints about Van Basten. The latest tittle-tattle from Brazil is that Filippo Scolari might be sitting alongside Leonardo. Leonardo is already part of the Milan setup, but hasn't got any managerial expertise. But Scolari would come in because, of course, he's managed half these players anyway. What else from the wide world of Italian football? Well, Mourinho is the latest manager to be linked with Real Madrid. Mourinho's just blown about 40 million euros of Inter's money. Well, some of that's players, of course, in a deal for two of the brightest stars of Genoa's season, and that's Diego Milito and Thiago Motta. So it will be an interesting time for him to go. And he did say a couple of weeks ago that he would definitely 100% be at Inter next year. So I tend to think he's going to turn that one down. Well, maybe talk with Sid about that in a second. But Claudio Ranieri has gone at Juventus. This happened literally just after Monday's pod. And Sean, a bit unfair, no, on poor old Claudio.
When you look at Claudio, you look at Juve's squad, you joke about Milan squad as well, but Juve's is just as old, just as decrepit. There hasn't been a lot of money around for him to spend. And, you know, he's got them into the Champions League places for year after, you know, the last couple of years. He's done, you know, he took them up, sorry, from Serie B and got them into the Champions League in the first attempt. And that's better than par, I think. And I think the trouble is the Juve fans are still casting their mind back 5-10 years to when Juve were, you know, the great side in Europe. And that's unrealistic with the money they've got at the club at the moment.
I think that the club didn't want to get rid of him. They don't fire managers during the season. It's the first time in 40 years they've done that. But the feeling was that he had lost the dressing room, that the lack of reaction during last weekend's draw at home with Atalanta was so marked from such a proud team that they had to do something. In the words of the club, we couldn't fire the players, so we fired the manager. And Ciro Ferraro has taken over to take them through the last two games of the season as they fight to hold on to third place and thus avoid the Champions League preliminary matches. Fiorentina just won. Point behind them, Juventus this weekend are at Siena, the surprising Siena. Fiorentina are at Lecce, who are battling. They're kind of in the Middlesbrough position, very close to going down. The big game, though, I would argue, is that Milan-Roma clash at the San Siro, the goodbye to Paolo Maldini. Now, later on, we'll be talking to Dr. Sid. In Scotland, huge weekend. Rangers 2 points clear of Celtic as they head into the final round. Rangers then with the title to lose. They haven't won it in the last three seasons, but they have a slightly trickier fixture there at Dundee United, while Celtic host Hearts. Speaking of Hearts, actually, in third place, they're heading for the Europa League. Ice Noodle posts in and says, hey, Pod Deities, can we possibly have a wee word on Hearts manager? Now, this is going to be what? Saba Laszlo? Have you heard of this bloke? Saba Laszlo, he's the Hearts manager. You'd think I would know how to pronounce him, his name. But anyway, he says that we were mildly baffled, Hearts fans, when our club had to pay off Uganda to secure his services. But since joining, he's been a glorious success. Not only has he taken a team that finished eighth last season to a third place finish, but best of all, he's been one of the most brilliant and eccentric men ever to enter the dour closed shop of Scottish backslapping that is the SPL. Coming out with such gems as, we have Egert Johnson, and we have almost made sexual violence against Egert because we have put him in every position, here, there, and up and down. You'd go to jail if you did this outside football, Sean.
What accent is that?
I don't know. It's
a kind of doing a Ugandan accent.
He's not Ugandan. He's from I'm guessing Laszlo. That would be what Slovakian, Czech, something like that. Hungarian, perhaps. Okay. And here's another one. If you see that your team plays this shit like we did in the first half, you can just run out of the stadium and say, it's Mother's Day tomorrow, and forget about the football. But we are guys. We are at Ibrox, and we are still in the first half. I wanted to kill some of the people in my dressing room at halftime, but then I would have had to go to jail, and we don't get a point. But the second half was sexy. This guy sounds comedy gold.
He sounds Dutch. Like your
I think you're
Jamaican extraction.
It's not the medium; it's the message. I think it's the. You're not meant to be laughing at me. It's the quotes, Sean.
You certainly can't imagine Walter Smith coming out with pre-match quotes like
should
that.
Should I do that in a Walter
post-match
Smith
post-match even?
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, there you go. So the ice noodle. Well done for that. It's going to be an exciting weekend. Let's go for some comedy line distortion and breakup and that kind of thing. So, right now, joining us on the line, quite literally from Spain, is Dr. Sid. You're on a train, Sid.
I am, James. How are you?
I am to you too, my Hindu friend or whatever that is. All right, well, listen, you're on the way to Barcelona for the Champions League press conferencing, yeah?
Yeah, Guardiola and Messi are going to speak, and then there'll be an almighty scrap for interviews with other players.
All right, then. Well, is there kind of physical violence and stuff as you try and jostle with one another?
Yes, quite often. And also, for those who've never been in a mix zone before, it really is basically a kind of a caged animal thing. You've got a player walking the other side of the barrier and journalists fighting on the opposite side trying to get to the player. And, of course, what makes it particularly awful is you've got cameramen there from TV, and they're swinging cameras around their shoulders like they were Tommy Cooper in The Plank, and you have to spend half your time ducking out of the way.
Sid, do you ever find the whole experience quite degrading? Just engaged in that kind of struggle just to interview a rich young millionaire who doesn't want to speak to you?
Who increasingly they're younger than we are as well, and that's even more degrading. Yeah, no, it's a horribly degrading process sometimes, yeah.
But I bet they know you and they go, oh, it's Sid. And then they stop
you.
Yeah,
exactly. You see, I'm a player. The players, they don't want to talk to journalists, but they seem, of course they do.
Right, okay.
That with occasion.
It's like contortion sometimes. You sort of get yourself into these terrible positions just so that your microphone or your dictaphone can get vaguely within spitting distance of said player.
But Amy's a girl. Sean wants to come in here. Amy, you're a girl, and girls don't get the same rough treatment that boys do in mixed zones. You do get away with a lot.
Once they're in the scrum, they do. The other thing, Amy's dead right there. The other thing, you need arms like Mr. Tickle sometimes. You need to kind of wiggle them round people and stick your microphone under someone's nose. It's a horrible process.
All right, so far we've had Mr. Tickle and the plank. Sean,
I was just saying the worst I've been in, and there's been a few. I was at the Olympics, and there were all these. It was in the US. Chinese had just been, the gymnasts had just been performing. They were all about 14, and they had all these like overweight 40-year-old, 50-year-old men clamoring to get an interview with them. And I was just being armpitted out of the way here. Right. And
did you not get mistaken for one of the competitors? Or
well, I
with
had
your
wish.
Youthful looks and lithe figure.
I had to do a similar thing at
the. And the leotard he was wearing, of course.
I did a similar thing in the winner's enclosure at the Cheltenham Festival, where you've all that and the risk of being kicked horses. By a horse.
Right, okay. Now, I should point out that we did call Sid to speak to him about Spanish football, and he's on a train and the like ago any minute, so perhaps we should get back onto the theme at hand. Now, first off, some people are saying that Cristiano Ronaldo's all set for Real Madrid. Discuss.
Madrid still have him as an option, but I think he's not their priority right now. There's been a very palpable sense of them backing away from Cristiano Ronaldo in the last couple of weeks. Bear in mind that there's a series of problems for them. The main big problem is Manchester United, and they don't necessarily want a big fight with Manchester United. And if they do, they don't want a big fight to end up being very costly, both financially and in terms of what it could do to their relationship with a club that they're fairly keen to try and keep as good friends, which obviously they're not under Ramon Calderon, but they could be again under Florentino Perez.
Right.
So I think Cristiano Ronaldo is becoming less likely.
Oh, okay. What about Jose Mourinho as the manager?
Well, I have to say I'm a little bit lost on Real Madrid and their manager, because what's really happening at the moment is that it's very clear that they had a very, very clear target, which was Arsene Wenger, but they always knew that was going to be difficult. So in the meantime, they're actually scrabbling around a little bit to try and find out. I think what's happening now as well is...
Sid, you sound a bit like a ventriloquist who's trying to make his puppet speak while drinking a glass of water and not doing a very good job.
I wish I could fly. You can't. We've got Orville now as well.
Orville, yep, okay. One of my favourites. And
Gockle of gear.
Right.
Gockle of gear.
Yeah, now, I never thought we'd reach a pod which consisted of two of our esteemed contributors just saying gockle of gear to each other. Endlessly. It has come to this. Four more, you say, Sean.
But you always thought that if two people were saying gockle of gear, one of them would be Barry.
Yeah. All right, now that we've got you back, every time I try and ask you a question, it goes funny again. All right, so now, in the meantime...
The tunnels.
Yes, okay. Now, in the meantime, the Liga has two games to go. Champions places are still up for grabs for Atletico Madrid, Villarreal and Valencia. But Atletico are in the box seat. They are at Bilbao. Tough game, no?
No, very easy game. Atletico Bilbao are already safe. I mean, it's a tough game in so much as Atletico Bilbao are an aggressive and quite feisty team. But going away to Bilbao when Atletico is safe shouldn't be a problem for Atletico Madrid.
All right.
The key words there are Atletico and Madrid.
Right. Villarreal hosting Valencia, meanwhile. That should be, what, a doddle, will it be? Sid has given up in disgust. I wanted to ask him about the relegation battle. Amazingly, 9 clubs can still go down, listeners. Key battle here, Valladolid, that'll be it, against, it's that one again.
Hello.
Sporting Gijón. I just mentioned the amazing relegation battle. Huge game coming up at Valladolid at Sporting Gijón.
A game that's causing all sorts of problems as well, because Sporting fans have been the best in Spain by a long, long way this year. They've taken a couple of thousand virtually to every away game, and of course they wanted to go as many of them as possible to this match because it's really, really big for them. Last away game of the season, they have to win in Valladolid really to have a chance of staying up. So they were saying, right, let's take 4,000 or 5,000 of us, and Valladolid said no, don't be silly. They offered Sporting a very, very small amount of tickets and at an expensive price, €75, and Sporting's fans said, well, actually, you know what, that's out of all of that is, and Sporting have broken off diplomatic relations, for want of a better word, with Valladolid. They're not going to go to the big fat cat lunch before the game, as the directors always have together. They're saying they don't want to take their fans at all, but their fans are actually going to go and march past the stadium anyway, and it's all getting a little bit nasty.
Wow, you mentioned Sporting taking a couple of thousand to every away game. Italian clubs used to do that, but then they had that big scandal about that one doesn't work for you. Taking a couple of thousand to every away game?
Oh, very good. I like it, yeah. We should have did that for the home games as well.
Yeah. See if we can let you go enjoy Barcelona. And I hope we can catch up with you on Monday.
Yeah, which will be build up to Champions League final. It'll be quite exciting, won't it?
Absolutely. All right, nice one. Yeah. Thank you very much, Sid.
That's all right. I'm going to go and hang myself in some bars now to try and stretch my arms.
Oh, what an image. Thank you, Sid. Right, now. Okay, that's it for part two. Coming up very shortly, we'll be looking at your posts, the weekend ahead and the Football League playoffs, and that exciting Wednesday night UEFA Cup final in Istanbul.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Right, once again, the posting boards have been busy this week. Many thanks for all your contributions. Lots of confectionery puns. I don't know if you had the chance to browse through those, did you, Barry?
I was revelling in them. There are a lot of Smarties out
early.
There.
Yeah, that one as well. Men Call Me Phil came up with some very inventive ones, including one about Terry's chalk light orange, which was fantastic. And can I just weigh in on the issue of highlighting puns in bold? No. Never. Under no circumstances. Hat and Bomb. I propose that as the season is coming to a close that for the final podcast, we vote on this blog for who we want to see in the final podcast. Interesting. In another note, that sounds awful.
I think that's a terrible
idea. It's a horrible
idea.
There's going to be all exclusive and stuff. Yeah.
How will Paul and Rafa and Kevin feel about being left out?
Indeed. Hat and Bomb also, or Hate and Bomb, says, I am sure someone said there was a five-side footy game sponsored by The Guardian featuring some of the pod members going on in London. Almost correct, Hat and Bomb. Sean, would you like to explain?
Well, there's every year that the Guardian has a sort of inter-department competition, and right. It's this Sunday.
This Sunday at Old Street?
Yeah, there's...
I thought you were going to say Old Trafford.
No, there's some sports fields not too far from Old Street, and it'll just be all day five-a-side. Very bad football and not very good, but quite good fun.
Right. Apparently, Raphael Honigstein is playing for Producer Pete's team, which you got to say is wrong. Who are you? Sean, are you playing in goal?
I'm not. It's a bank holiday weekend. I'm spending with my wife and young baby.
Interesting. There's two sports teams out there, though, aren't there? Any pod members be featuring for anyone who lives?
John Ashdown, I think, will be playing, but he's a bit on the porky side, so he may be sort of managing rather than...
Amy, are you featuring at all in this?
No.
Jonathan Wilson, is he playing?
Some of us have got football to watch on Sunday.
That's true,
with all due respect to the quality of
true.
Game
Who's
going on at Old
the
Street.
Side?
Some of us, I will be manning the site.
Okay, there you go.
Because I keep forgetting these bank holidays are coming up, so I don't put in to get the time off, right. And then everyone else beats me to it.
Right, okay.
I end up working.
We mentioned man crushes earlier. A lot of posters with a lot of love for Xavi Alonso and Arteta. Obviously, something about that Hispanic, smouldering type quality. I had to think about this, and I actually think that my one would be Gigi Casiraghi. Don't know if that one catches you unaware. He just looks such a sweetheart and desperately good looking as well. He's filled out a bit of late. I don't know if you've seen him on the bench for the under-21s, but in his day, my word.
And I thought you'd be more of a Fernando Redondo.
No.
He's quite left wing, quite proud, quite good looking.
No.
The long hair.
All right. What
Come
I do
on,
notice...
Vladimir Boban. Come on, guys.
Vladimir Boban, really? Mm. He's too dirty, I think. He would be. I bet he'd be rough. Whereas Gigi would be tender and that kind of thing. I noticed that nobody's mentioning any English players, but then Villa Support Group comes to our aid with his man crush on Matt Letizia. Who played football like a man with the legs of Pele and the torso of a Dean Windass. Plus, he seemed happy to stay at Southampton forever, so I imagine he'd be pretty low maintenance. It's wise thinking. All right, Portlander, any plans for end-of-season highlights?
I heard some of Fleet Street Finest on Radio 5 Live's sports show last night doing a roundup of the, sort of giving out their end-of-year gongs. And, I don't think it's a very good idea.
Do you not? I mean, well, the best of, I think,
they were
probably...
They were having a sideways look at the other.
Producer Pete was just chipping in saying there's no time because he's very, very overworked, Producer Pete. So if posters wish to come up with their own list, we could kind of collate that and then...
pass it off as our own work. As usual.
As usual. Sorry, Sean.
No, as I say, maybe if we post two or three topics and then they can...
Well, you settle on one or two and three and they can...
Yeah, but let's not have the blind and the obvious.
All right. Okay. Weirdest Sean Ingle analogy? That would be one, definitely.
Isn't that weird?
Or most creative, sorry.
The best
weird
Jones Richardson pun.
Well, thank you, Sean.
Best Barry anecdote.
Right, yeah.
Best Barry.
Sexiest female voice, obviously, because that's what...
Well, I'd like to ask Barry...
This is ironic. Yeah, it's just that, you know, every time a woman comes on, it's like, I would. That's the reaction the post is. Anyway, sorry, Sean.
I'd like also best random Barry post between about the hours of 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. on Thursday night to Friday morning when he's clearly been at the hotel bar or his bar.
Right.
Well, that you see, you're insinuating that I post while under the influence of alcohol, which is not true because I'm absolutely terrified that someday I'll go on and be really abusive. So I'm programmed in the same way that everyone has this inbuilt program that gets them home no matter how drunk they are. I have another program that, you know, prevents me from A, sending emails, B, sending text messages, and C, logging on to the Guardian Football Weekly website.
Right.
So all my ravings are actually sent in.
It's interesting that inbuilt program didn't prevent you from posting. From producing several podcasts from Euro 2008. That's fine. Apparently, that slipped under the radar.
Yeah.
Hat and Bomb posting back in as well, saying it's amazing how Hiddink, who we were talking about on Monday, got treated as a hero for taking a team from fourth to third in the Premier League and exiting the Champions League at the semi-final stage. Yet last season, Avram Grant got vilified for taking a team from fifth, sixth to second, and within a penalty kick of being European champions. Fair point, eh?
It's a very good point.
Mm. All right. Loads to get through, including the UEFA Cup. They were singing in the Ukraine, badum chish. But the Germans were saying, where the trophy gone, or some really poor pun like that. After the 2-1 victory by Shakhtar Donetsk, the first time a Ukrainian team has ever won, I believe, a European Cup. And Michail Luchescu, the manager, saying, I hope this result will give us more stamina and strength to prepare for the 2012 European Championships, which, of course, they are way behind on putting stadiums and infrastructure in place. Four, Hey Habib says, nice one, Shakhtar. It's always good when the underdog wins. Not sure how much of an underdog they are, though, because they've got
boodles
of cash.
They've got a billionaire sugar daddy who was, I think, nearly first up to collect a medal. I don't like to see these sugar daddies and chief executives getting presented with medals after games. They don't deserve them. But he was one of the first up to collect a medal, very reluctant to let any of the players have a go with the trophy afterwards. And even the betting before the game suggested nobody was quite sure how to call it. It was quite a good game. Two goalkeeping errors, three goals, two of them as a result of goalkeeping errors. And it was kind of hard on Tim Wiese, the Werder Bremen goalkeeper, because he had an excellent, excellent game, but he let in a really soft one in extra time, and that's what won it for Shakhtar.
Mm, okay. They were, of course, without Diego Werder Bremen. And a bit lost without
And him. Hugo Almeida, yeah. They were a bit sort of out of ideas. They didn't create that many chances. I think the better team won.
Mm. All right. And that's the last ever UEFA Cup, well, until they decide the Europa League's rubbish and bring it back.
Well, I worked out yesterday. I think it was something like about 350 or 60 games that had to be played to decide the winners of this year's UEFA Cup. It's going to be more teams in the Europa League next season. They'll be playing home and away in the group stages, which means it's going to be probably more than 400 games to decide the winners of the Europa League.
You could play set up to 17 games, I think.
At the moment, it's 19 if you get to the final.
Really?
Yeah. So if that's going to go up, it's even crazier. Because the point that people make is that any team who's actually got anything going on domestically is going to put this tournament on the back.
Call me old-fashioned. What's so wrong with having a Cup Winners' Cup, a UEFA Cup, and even possibly some sort of Champions League, perhaps with a straight knockout?
Well, maybe reduce the number of Champions League teams. This is my idea that's been posited elsewhere. If you need to drop in teams from the Champions League, do it at the start. Make three places in the Champions League. The rest, the next three or four, go into the UEFA Cup, and then you have 120 teams, is it? And you have a straight knockout, and then all the games are important, and people turn up and watch them and tune in and stuff. Michel Platini, who, as the head of UEFA, bears some responsibility for the hideous mess that this cup is continuing to be, sat all alone at the start of the second half because all the UEFA suits were off gorging on the Turkish buffet. But then they all came back. It was just an emblemic image, wasn't it? He was sat there, slumped in his chair, looking desperately bored. This is about 10 minutes into the second half, with empty seats all around him in the VIP box. And then eventually the fat cats wandered back. But it's just wrong, isn't it?
It was a shame. I remember so many great European Cup Winners' Cup finals, so many great UEFA Cup finals over the years. And now no one really cares. It's great if you're a Shakhtar Donetsk fan. But something's been lost there, and I think it's right.
Took so long to bake it. and I'll never have that recipe again.
I do think it's good that a team from a country like Ukraine can win a European competition. I mean, that's no reflection particularly on necessarily on the format of whatever kind of mess they've created. But I just think generally the fact that a team from a country like that hasn't had that kind of international prestige before, that's a good thing.
Yep.
It didn't do Zenit St. Petersburg that much good last year because I thought they'd do really well. I thought they might even win the Champions League this season because they were so impressive in the UEFA Cup last season. They were very impressive against Manchester United in the European Super Cup.
Sevilla a few years ago was sort of equally impressive, really, and didn't kick on in the same way.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. That was the UEFA Cup. Goodbye. Now, lots of playoffs and stuff are coming up this weekend. In League 2, Gillingham take on Shrewsbury. Gillingham. Oh, I don't know, League 2. Come on, Gillingham take on Shrewsbury. Tumpty-dumpty-dum. Shrews thrash the Gills 7-0 in a league game earlier this season.
Oh, now it's the Gills. It doesn't mean the Gills.
I had a momentary lapse of concentration. Now everyone's laughing at me. Fine. I'll be your clown. Come on. Does anybody know anything about this game? Care to call it, Sean Ingle?
I would like to see Shrewsbury win, just for the fact that I used to go to Gillingham quite a bit. I've done a few matches there over the years, and that's not very particularly nice stadium. It's quite a dodgy walk from the ground to the stadium. And Shrewsbury, I know a couple of fans, and it'd be nice to see them go up. They've sort of had a bad run of things in the last few years. So.
Excellent.
But Shrewsbury
All right.
had a lot of money spent on them at the start of this season, I think. I'm open to correction. And Gillingham, Peter Crouch slagged off Gillingham in his autobiography.
Why?
Because he was
no
there.
Doorways or one?
He just had nothing good to say about it. Totally.
It really was a spectacular attack. It comes from nowhere in his book where he talks about Gillingham.
Right. But then we know that he possesses that nasty streak, don't we? Like the time they tried to make him pay for his high-protein carbohydrate top-up. Yes, OK, Sunday in League One, Millwall take on Scunthorpe. Scunny have already lost a Wembley final this season, the Johnston Paints affair, to Luton. OK. Anything about that? Anyone want to be rude about either?
Well, I think first of all, you have to give Millwall a lot of credit for beating Leeds, and Leeds were flying in the league, and that was a fantastic result. You know, it was a terrible. Both games weren't particularly good. Scunthorpe, I'd like to see them go up because I think they played some really nice football this season. They were a bit unlucky against Luton in the Johnson Paint, and I'd like to see them in the Championship.
All right, then.
Is it just me? I've watched a few of the playoff games, and there seems to be a dearth of goals in all the sort of semi-finals so far. And playoffs used to be really good and really entertaining, and they don't seem to be anymore. I think, obviously, our managers are being very cagey, but... I hope the finals are better than the semi-finals.
Well, we all remember Clive Mendonca and classic 5-4s and 3-2s. I think in recent years I can't think of any great playoff finals.
Well, Gillingham were on the wrong end of one of the best playoff finals ever when Manchester City beat them. Paul Dickoff scored two in the last couple of minutes of extra time. James, talk us through that.
No time, Barry. Yeah. Sadly. Because
the Guardian's own Steve Claridge, didn't he have a last-minute wonder poke to get Leicester City up?
Meantime, Monday in the Championship, it is Burnley against Sheffield United. Burnley, a 33-year exile from the top flight, whereas Sheffield United, of course, were up there recently until that rather nasty Tevez business. All sorts of humorous people suggesting that now they might like to sign Carlos if he's leaving Manchester United. Wouldn't that be ironic? And they've got Jamie Ward and Darius Henderson are out with injury. That'll have an impact. Sorry, I'm banging the table in my excitement. Now that is the big game. Who's going to be coming up then?
I think Sheffield United are probably marginal favourites because they have a bit more experience of this kind of thing. But Burnley have done so well this season and they've had so many big games and high-profile games, particularly in their cup runs where they played a lot of Premier League teams and fared extremely well. Just a little bit of me thinks Burnley might have the character to see this one through.
Wow, that'd be remarkable. Yeah. Excellent. All right, well, you know what? We'll be back on Monday. Sadly, we won't be able to include the result of that game because we will be recording before that. We'll have a round of all the other stuff that's happening this weekend, and clearly there is plenty of it. In the meantime, many thanks for joining us today. Sean Ingle.
Cheers, James.
Thank you, Barry Glendening.
You're welcome.
And you too, Amy Lawrence.
On behalf of all the people of Gillingham, thank you very much.
If Brighton were in the playoff, would you be talking about the Sea Gulls?
That's it then. Hey, I'll be back on Monday, perhaps.